Hello, everyone, and welcome to the American Ninja Warrior Wrap-Up Podcast. This is a very, very special episode of the podcast because we have a very, very special guest. You know that Lita is almost always on this podcast, or at least may almost always be on in any future edition. But today we have someone much better than Lita. It's Megan Martin. How you doing,
Megan? Equally as awesome as Lita.
Yes.
I'm great. How are you guys?
I'm great. Lita, how are you doing?
I'm awesome. Everybody who listens to this podcast knows that Megan has been my dream guest forever. We met each other in Vegas. It was so exciting. So I will try not to gush too much so that we can get into it. But thank you so much for being here.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Yes, Lita's been like fangirling for the last half hour in anticipation for Megan Martin.
I mean, we had quite the meeting, so.
Yeah, yes, we did.
Fun. Good photos were taken.
Yes, yes, very true. And Lita, all the credit to Lita for getting Megan on the podcast. She put the work in, contacted everyone, and set it all up, so. Good job, Lita.
Wow, this is the first time you've ever given me a compliment, Taryn.
I mean, I've only booked like all the other guests.
So. Wow. He's counting.
Okay, so we are here to talk about the Denver finals, the Denver City finals here on the podcast. I thought this was a very fun episode. I really enjoyed it. Megan, you did great. Ian's run was amazing. So lots of interesting stuff to talk about. I just want to like talk quickly through the obstacles here, because this was one of the more difficult courses, I think we've ever seen. Ian said it was the most difficult one he'd ever faced. What did you think of the course in Denver?
I do think that the Denver course was quite difficult. I think what was most difficult about it was kind of low percentage. It was very like technical as a course. So it wasn't that like any specific obstacle was like so difficult, but it was just pretty finicky. So you kind of had to be like perfect, which obviously is nearly impossible. So it was quite a challenge. And I also think running a course in Denver is just a little bit more difficult just because of the altitude. I know I live here, but I still felt it way more than I did in Indy. Like I felt like I was breathing heavy. And I know I'm in better shape than I was in Indy. So I think that kind of shows you how hard it is to breathe.
Yeah, the people from Denver definitely have a home field advantage a bit, I think.
For sure.
Yeah.
A lot of ninjas came out like weeks before to like acclimate, actually, which I think is probably really smart.
Yeah, good call. So we have the floating steps into the ring swing, and then the bouncing spider, the paddle boards, rail runner. I like rail runner. I think that's a fun obstacle to watch, at least.
Yeah.
And then the warped wall as the qualifying course. And then the back half, we had the salmon ladder, as always, into the wedge, the deadly wedge, which basically took everybody out, as it usually does. And then the Ninjago roll, which I guess is a sponsored obstacle.
It's sponsored, but also fan designed.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. They mentioned the fan. I have her name written down here somewhere. But I was like, man, I hope they gave this little girl like residuals for the sponsor. Sponsorship or something like
the 11-year-old
really
girl
took over her obstacle.
One would hope.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm not a super big fan of sponsored obstacles. Like, if this becomes a staple, or is it, it's just gonna like this movie is going to be the name of the obstacle in perpetuity, like
also,
years down the line?
Doesn't Ninjago roll kind of make you think of sushi? Like, yes. Like it's like Lego sushi. I don't know.
Very much so. Yeah,
there's a lot going on.
Yeah,
is Ninjago a term? I've never heard this.
It's the name
before.
Of the
is
movie.
No.
Where did it come from?
Like ninja and Lego, Taryn.
Oh.
Oh, like Brangelina.
Yes. The portmanteau.
Okay. All right. I get it now. Still not a fan though. Then, of course, we cap it off with the dead, very, very hard elevator climb. Man, that was crazy. I can't wait to get to Ian's run. They also point out that the governor of Colorado is there to watch. There was some football guy at the last one that was watching, too.
Oh, really?
Quarterback.
I haven't got to watch any of the episodes except for last night's because I just got back from Europe, so I couldn't watch any of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's part. I mean, your package was all about how you have been crazy busy doing all of these these things. So, like, I think we should be thanking you to for giving us your time here on a podcast.
Yeah, Megan's on a spirit journey, traveling the world.
Yes, yeah. Spirit journey, yeah. One photo shoot at a time.
Your spirit sisters.
Yes.
Oh yeah, you're doing your thing too.
Yes, I'm doing my thing. I'm
there you go.
Not as international or glamorous, but traveling the country.
Right, you were in Canada or something, right?
Yes, I was. I was just in Montreal. Went to a really cool climbing gym there.
They have some good ones there. I actually, yeah, it was like a convert.
Yeah, you should go to Alley Up. It's like converted silos.
Oh, yeah, I wrote I write notes when I watch the episode, and for your package, I was like, man, she's super busy. She's rock climbing, American Ninja Warrior, doing modeling, doing so many podcasts. Clearly, like, it's eating up all your time. So thank you, thank you for giving us some of it.
Of course.
Yes. So tell us about your experience in Denver. Like, this is like your home sort of field. What was it like, you know, going there, doing the qualifying, all that?
I think it was kind of, I mean, I really liked that it was in Denver because then I didn't have to travel, but it was kind of nice too, because, the first year I was on the show was in Denver. So it's kind of cool coming back to Denver, but like being way more experienced this time, because I didn't know what I was doing the first year, like really what I had gotten myself into. So it was kind of cool to have a different perspective of the whole thing. And I was really happy. The weather was actually good for once. Never experienced a good city final weather day. So that was nice. And it was cool to, you know, have so many people that you knew in the crowd. So, I mean, they wanted like some of the kids I coached to come, but like, it's just way too late for little kids to be coming and watching. Like their parents are like, no.
Yeah, I had that thought where it was like so many of like the family and friends are like carrying babies, and I was like, oh, you poor soul.
There were tons of kids in totally. Vegas. I was shocked.
I know. But I guess in Vegas, it was summer. Like this, it kind of worked out.
It was summer.
Like it was like, yeah, it was definitely summer. It was like a week before school ended for like the kids in Colorado. So they were all like in their last week of school. So it wouldn't have been so good for them. But yeah, I loved being in Denver. It was great. I was glad my parents could come out because my mom's gone to the city finals before, but my dad has never. He had just been at Vegas, so it was cool to have my parents there. But yeah, it's nice to be on home turf, I guess, but I would rather go somewhere with less altitude, probably, for breathing purposes.
How did you get into rock climbing? I mean, this is like basically something that you're obviously very good at. Professional rock climber is your title on the show. How did you get into all that?
I started climbing when I was 11, in Florida, actually, of all places, in a climbing gym. And I climbed for 4 years, started doing professional competitions when I was about 12. And then I quit climbing for 7 years and I started pole vaulting, did that in high school and college, and then decided that when I was about to graduate college, I really missed climbing and I kind of wanted to do that professionally. So that was my plan. Everyone else was like, oh, I'm going to grad school or law school. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a professional rock climber.
Yeah.
All my friends' parents were like, okay.
I think something that's overlooked is that you went to a really competitive school for pole vaulting. You went to Vanderbilt, which in its own right, even if you weren't busy being an athlete, is a very challenging school. So I imagine you couldn't just be like, yeah, I'm going to pole vault and then keep climbing seriously. And then also keep up with academics.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to.
Yeah.
Definitely wouldn't have worked. But yeah, so I've been back in climbing since like 2012-ish. So it's been going great. And it led me to American Ninja Warrior, which has been awesome too. So yay for sports.
Yeah. How did you get involved with the Wolfpack? They're great friends of the podcast, Wolfpack. Love these guys.
When I got the call that I was going to do the show for season 6, was it 6 or 5? I can't even remember what it was. 2014. That's all I remember.
That was season 6.
Was it? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. What are we on? Okay.
We're on 9.
We're on 9. But okay. Wow. Sorry guys. Yeah. Season 6.
Yes. Season 6.
I got the call for season six and Noah reached out to me. I actually ran into him at the climbing gym and he was like, oh, we've been on the show. Like, I think I had been at a climbing competition with him when I was like really young and I knew Ian pretty well, but it was Ian's first time on the show too. But Noah invited me over to his house in Fort Collins and I just started training with them mostly after the first year. Cause the first year I didn't really train cause it was like all happening so fast and I didn't prepare for it ahead of time because I didn't know I was going to do it until I kind of sent in a video because Denver was the last qualifier. So I just like hit it off with them. They're all climbers. And so I started training with them and got to bring some femininity to that group. So yeah, it works out well.
Yeah, I think Akbar called you the she-wolf.
Yeah, that started in Kansas City. And I just, you know, it's funny. But I don't know if I would have really gone with that nickname in hindsight, but whatever, it's fine.
It's a yeah. Shakira song. There's that.
I know, that's the only good thing, I think, maybe. Because, like, really, a she-wolf is not really what I think people might think it is. I don't know. So. Whatever. It's fine.
At least it's not Big Dog Ninja.
Right.
Yeah. Is that somebody's that. Nickname?
That was Jody's yeah,
no way,
because he was like, if I get to the top of the warped wall, Akbar has to give me a nickname, and then Akbar goes, your nickname is Big Dog Ninja.
Yeah, because the giant was already taken and he did not seem like incredibly pleased about that.
I think the best one that Akbar came up with this, what did he call me? What is it, like Showtime, Primetime, All Time or something? Like, that was pretty good. Or like comparing me to Muhammad Ali. I was like, all right, I'll take it.
Like, sounds like something cool. Akbar would say.
Yeah.
Akbarisms. Such a funny one.
So you mentioned being the only woman in the wolf pack, and you know, obviously this has been a huge couple of years for women, and I just want to get your take. We got to ask Alyssa about it a couple weeks ago, but your take on this new women's rule, what was your first reaction to it and how do you feel about it now?
Originally, I didn't really like the rule. I didn't think that it made sense. But I mean, I do get the fact that they don't really want a wild card anymore.
Yeah.
Which I guess that's cool. Because then everybody kind of has to earn their spot, which is good. It does put more pressure on you, I think, only in a sense though, because if you make it into the top whatever anyway, it's fine. And I think for me that was always my mindset anyway, because my region is so strong on the guy's side that like it was like if I didn't finish a qualifier I wouldn't make it to the second day. And so this year it was cool to have like girls with me on the second day because I had never competed with girls in a city final before. So in the end, I think I like the rule. It's more fun. It gives girls or women more of a chance to make it to the city final, I think, more so than even to Vegas, you know?
Yeah.
Because they would take women straight to Vegas who hadn't been in a city final. So now it's nice that more women can be in the city final and like try the back half of the course and stuff.
Yeah. And I think that's an interesting point about competing with other women, because I think a lot of the time, just psychologically being the only woman in mm-hmm. any room in any setting, particularly competitive ones, can mm-hmm. be a lot of pressure. And yeah. especially, I mean, you're one of the few preeminent women of color as well. Mm-hmm. And I feel like having at least just a cohort of yeah. other women can maybe increase the comfort level.
Totally. And we can like talk about the obstacles beforehand. You get to see more people go, and it's like sometimes when you watch the guys it doesn't really help. Like I remember the first year when I did the double steps, I was shocked when I did the transfer part of it because I thought it was much closer than it was, but then I forgot that I'm like much shorter than everybody else who was doing the transfer. And so I got there and I was like, oh man, okay, keep moving. Like I didn't know it was gonna be that hard.
Yeah.
So it's definitely cool to have more girls on the course.
Do you find that you generally have to like think about the obstacles and how to approach them in a different way than many of the like taller athletes do?
I definitely have to think about it. I always try to watch more people that are my height, like whether it's the testers or people going earlier in the night, because otherwise you're spective. But I don't try to focus on it too much because I don't want it to like get in my head that like maybe I can't do it because I'm shorter or something. So I just like focus on the little, figure out what I'm going to do, and then just like do it.
Do they have any female testers?
They do. They have in the ATS crew, there are a few female testers. And then when they actually have people like come in that just want to test, they always have women go too. And if you want to be a tester, actually, it's better to be a woman because you get to go more because they want to like see if the girls can do it or not. So it's kind of nice for the testers.
All right. So can you walk us through your run in qualifying in Denver? You know, this first time you're going through the course and you end up falling on the rail runner. What happened there?
So on the rail runner, I thought I knew what I was going to do. And I was a little worried about the transfer, but then when I did it, it was fine. But that next section of the rail runner was a little more difficult to get up because the bar was a lot wider. And then I had thought about dismounting early, but then when I was up there, I kind of forgot about it because the only person I had seen do that earlier in the night was Bart, and he's quite a large man. So I was like, he barely made the platform. So I was like, well, I don't know, like maybe I should just keep trying to go up. But then I kept like sliding backwards, and like the bar was so big that I got cocked to the side a little bit. So I kind of, at that point, should have maybe just tried to dismount anyway, but instead I just tried to fix it and then just lost control of the whole thing. So that was like not really ideal because it's kind of hard when the platform's like right there and then you fall. Mm. And I hadn't fallen in a qualifier before, so that was kind of a bummer. But
yeah. Did you immediately know what you did wrong so you could correct it? Or did you get advice from Ian and from other people? Because you obviously did great on it the next night.
The next night I just decided that I was gonna just dismount from the earlier dismounting spot, I guess, even if it felt awkward, but just having it in my head that I was gonna do that and not even try to go and mess with continuing up the actual rail, because then I didn't find myself like losing control and whatnot. So I was able to dismount.
Yeah. So, when you get to the run in the finals, you manage to correct the mistake on the rail run. You get through, you get up the wall. Akbar says, hurry up and go get your popcorn, 'cause there's going to be a show on the back half.
He said that.
Yes.
I wish he would have given me popcorn.
And then you like immediately do a cartwheel. And we're like,
oh God. Yeah. Okay. I literally can't believe I did that. I don't know what I was up there. And I think this is the first time, like, 'cause I didn't hit a buzzer. I mean, I know if I've been on the back half before, it's not hitting a buzzer there, but like the first time up the wall each season, I feel like there's a buzzer. So there's something to do. And I was like standing there and I was like, I guess I'm going to do a cartwheel. And I was like, why did you just do that so late? Like a cartwheel? Like, come on. I was hoping they weren't going to show it too, but then.
Honestly, a cartwheel is better than like super lame dance moves.
I guess that's true. Thank you. I appreciate that. Because I was embarrassed the minute I did it. I was like, oh my gosh, why? Oh, man.
So, and Matt Dolce, he fake bowled at the start of the course. So I feel like cartwheel's still better than that.
Some of the casting people were trying to get me to do the bend and snap at the start of the course.
Oh my God. That would have been incredible.
I refused. I was like, I can't do that.
Wait, why were they trying to get you to do that?
Because it was like when we were filming, it was a joke. One of the casting people would ask everybody like, oh, can you do the bend and snap? And like when I did it, he was like, oh my God, you do it so well. And then he'd be like, Megan, show this person the bend and snap. And he was like, you have to do it at the start of the course. I'm like, I am not doing that. No.
You
can beg, but I'm not.
There's so many similarities between you and Elle Woods. I'm always saying it.
So many though. She has a little dog, I have a little cat, you know.
Basically the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the cartwheel was probably a better choice, although I would have loved the bend snap.
Yeah, maybe we'll save that for another time.
Akbar is basically losing it at this point. You get up the warped wall. He says, I'm about to lose it, I'm telling you.
He's a trip.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He was very pumped up for you. You get onto the wedge, obviously up the salmon ladder very easily, or at least it looks as very easy. I've tried it. It's not fun. Easy. I don't know how you do it.
it's one of my faves.
You get onto the wedge and you could tell immediately you were pretty stuck in there.
It wouldn't move. It was so annoying.
It looks annoying just to watch it because you can tell, like, you can tell exactly what's happening there. Yeah. And you're like trying to get it out.
And it wouldn't move.
Yeah. And like the force it requires to get out, like it was too much. And then, you know, you're done.
Yeah. It was like I got onto the wedge and like the first little hop I did moved, but it made me a little uneven. And so I like knew that I needed to like go a little harder the next time. So I tried and then I just like basically got denied and I was like, okay. And I tried again even harder. And then next thing you know, I'm like back flopping in the water. I can't breathe and whatnot.
I love hearing people talk about the wedge because normally if it's a really challenging obstacle, people are like, that was a fun challenge or like that was really difficult. But people are just like, I hate the wedge. The wedge is so annoying.
It's so finicky. Like, I just wanted to get onto the Ninjago roll because I was like, it's stable. I'm just going to, like, move it. Like, nothing. Like, I just hate when all of a sudden you're out of control and it's because the obstacle itself is not stable. Like, if I can just hang on something, that's awesome. But, like, when you have to, like, move it somewhere, it makes it a little more difficult and really finicky. Yeah, the wedge is not. I don't like that one. It's silly. Silly obstacle.
Brian said that he was going to retire if he didn't get past the wedge. Hopefully he doesn't through with that.
Yeah, hopefully. Goodness gracious. Yeah.
But man, it looks very frustrating. Akbar, who was very, he had already lost at this point. When you go down, he goes, no! Daggone it! Sha-na-na!
How do I not see any of this? Oh my gosh. That's amazing. I'm going to see him next week and I'm going to be like, Shana, no.
You have to say, I see you.
Yeah.
I see you. Yep. Uh-huh. He's so funny.
Did you know the person in the crowd who was holding the Marry Me, Meghan Martin sign? Or is that just a random weird person?
I think it's just a random person. I don't know. Do you remember the one year someone literally asked me to marry them?
I don't remember that. What did you say?
I don't remember.
You're just like,
It was Kansas City. It was the qualifier, I think. And there, Christine was interviewing me and someone's like, marry me, Megan. And I think I just laughed.
I do kind of remember this. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, well, okay. That was weird. I remember coming back to the gym and all the little kids were like, someone asked you to marry them. I was like, yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, you have a lot of very enthusiastic fans.
Yeah, marriage proposals.
We've had a lot of marriage proposals this season.
Yeah. Oh yeah, right. Yeah, like actual ones on the show. Yeah. Oh. Definitely.
You came very close to the top 15 here. I believe Nick Kostreski came in 15th with 6 minutes and 3 seconds to the wedge, and you had 6 minutes and 19 seconds.
Yeah, had I not done that car wheel. But it's okay. Then he would have been booted out. And he came up to me and said that he was like, you were so close to my time. Like, good thing you didn't. I was like nonchalantly walking. Like, I didn't even think about the time aspect. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Well, that's something that, like, I think people have noticed, like, you know, because people aren't always like really trying to get through the obstacles quickly. Mm-hmm. And like sometimes they do take their time. And sometimes it's like, I feel like it's necessary time because you need to gather your breath. But sometimes it's like, you know, you're playing to the crowd a little, you're having fun. But it can come down to seconds. Like, how aware of you of that when you're on the course?
Clearly not aware at all. I'm too busy doing cartwheels. I don't really think about it as much in the qualifier and city final. Although I think with the new rule, I didn't need to think about it as much. I think had I needed to actually get there in time to make it to Vegas, I probably would have been moving faster. Just knowing that I had to be in the top 15, but since all I had to do, and like once I had done the warped wall, I already knew I was going. So time wasn't really a factor in my mind.
So what was your reaction watching Ian on the course? I mean, that was a very intense run through the whole thing, you know, going through this whole thing.
I have a really hard time watching people that like I train with or like that I care about, I think it's really hard to watch them. Like, I don't look excited when I'm watching them. I feel nervous. I feel like scared almost. And so like I, especially watching him go up the elevator climb, I was like, oh my gosh, is he going to do it? Like, what is happening? He looked so tired. I was like, this is not good. I don't know. Like, is he going to fall? This is terrible. Like, he has to finish. Like, it was very nerve-wracking. It's hard watching people, especially like when you're on the sideline on camera too. It's like, oh
yeah. You feel like you got to give a reaction, right? Yeah. Like, because they're filming you. Yeah.
Which, by the way, I was sent many screenshots of my reaction to Noah's fall in the qualifier.
What was
happened
the...
to catch it?
I don't remember.
He fell and I made this face, which too bad for the podcast people, they won't be able to see this, but I was like
it's like a yikes.
I don't know what to do. Jerry texted it to me and was like, you look disgusted. I was like, oh my god. I didn't know what to do. I wasn't expecting him to fall. I was trying, like, I don't know. I was like freaking out. Yeah. And I made this like terrible face. I felt so bad.
How did you and Jerry, I know that you and Jerry Dorelio are close friends. Did you meet each other through Ninja?
Yeah. We met Team Ninja season one. And then we were in the same qualifier in Indy, which was really fun. And I feel like that year we got like pretty close. And then she moved to Colorado Springs, which is like an hour or like hour and a half, 2 hours from me. But we like sometimes go to this gym, Ninja Intensity in Castle Rock, and like train and stuff and do like silly little videos of acrobatic weird things. She's super fun. So I like that she lives in the state.
Yeah. And it was probably really exciting for you two to go to Vegas together.
Oh yeah. I was so excited because that was like the plan, right? Like I was hoping that the two of us would be the ones that were going. So I was really excited. It was like so nerve wracking watching her too. It's funny because like we ran pretty close to each other, like in the night. And so I just remember, I think it was the first night, I was like, I want to cheer for you on the sidelines, but like I need to finish warming up. Like, because I was so nervous and stuff. And then she starts running, and like next thing you know, I'm like on the sidelines because like I was starting to watch her, and I was like, okay, I have to see what happens. Like, I have to be there. Like, forget my warm up. Like, whatever. Because I like cared so much, but it's kind of funny. I wish they would put like friends further apart or something. It would be really nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's like nerve wracking. You don't want to get too tired and you're trying to get your warm up in, but you also want to see your friends and tough.
Yeah. I mean,
stuff.
It must be difficult, like trying to maintain the peak condition where it's like, you're not like, you're not too full. You're not too hungry. You're not too tired, but you're not too like wired. Like, how do you maintain that?
You know, every year is different. I feel like something always happens each year. Like I remember Kansas City, I got to the course and I like had a full on meltdown before even walking in. I was like, I'm so nervous. Like I called my mom. I was like, I don't think I can do this. I'm so scared. Just because like it's a lot, like as an athlete, you're competitive and you want to always be able to do your best. And I think it's just scary to be out there and like the unknown of all the obstacles and everything. It just can be a little overwhelming. Like once you like take a deep breath and like sit back, it's fine. But there's like always a moment where you're like kind of freaking out. This year, I just felt like I had been training more than normal and I felt good. But then like these little things kept happening. Like we're walking through the course and all of a sudden I'm getting a migraine and I'm like, oh my gosh, this can't be happening. And so like, luckily I went really late in the qualifier. So I like took some leave, laid down, whatever. I'm like, yes, I feel great now. Like everything's going to be okay. I go to the bathroom and I have a wool like little hat on and somehow a piece of fuzz gets caught in my eye.
Oh my God.
It was like the most ridiculous thing. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't see. Like there is literally like there, my vision is blurred from a piece of fuzz. And so next thing you know, I'm like on the other side and there's like an EMT like splashing water. I'm like, what is this? I am not this traumatic. Like, this is so embarrassing. Like, I literally went to the bathroom and now I can't see. Like, why is this happening today? I can't even handle it.
Oh my God. Can you imagine if Matt was like, Meghan Martin coming off an injury just tonight? She got a piece of fuzz in her eye. What a brave soul. Just being here is winning for Meghan Martin.
I know. Well, so what's funny about that is like in my interview with Christine, I like started to say something about like, oh, like today was a little rough. And then she was like, can you elaborate on that? I go, actually, I don't want to. I was like, I literally go, I don't want that to be part of my story. I was like, oh, no.
A whole package about the adversity of fuzzballs.
Right? It was so embarrassing. Like, people were walking by, and I was like, I'm fine. They were like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, it's literally a piece of fuzz. This is so embarrassing. Please don't judge me. Like, oh, my gosh. It was too much. But that's life.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine, like, you know, you're going on this show. It's once a year. Mm-hmm. And like you said, there are obstacles where just like out of nowhere, you're done. Yeah. Like that must be so nerve wracking, yeah. Especially knowing that millions of people are going to be watching too. Like,
yeah.
I mean,
you don't want to let them down.
Yeah, exactly. I can't even imagine.
Yeah. It's a little bit much. Honestly, it's so funny because like after, like I had my first World Cup of the season right after I finished filming Denver, and I have never been so calm in a competition. I was like, oh, this is nothing. Like, I'm just so excited to be here. I'm so excited to climb. Like, there's no like cameras everywhere. Like, I'm climbing with other people. Like, this is so chill. I did so well because I was just excited to climb, and I felt like I didn't have the serious overwhelming nerves because those nerves I had gotten on the show, and I was like, okay, I'm done for a little bit so I can breathe again.
Yeah, you can always hang on to a wall. There's no like, you know, yeah. You're not going to get stuck in a wedge and then be done. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and I feel like for those climbing competitions, you're at least very in control of your own image. Like you can post silly photos of yourself on Instagram and just be like, yeah, try hard. Whereas like the producers are totally determining, yeah, what we see of you on American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Very true.
Did Brian say he broke his nose on the Rail Runner?
Did he?
He said that.
I think that's what he said in the package.
But really?
He looked fine, and it was only the next day, so.
I don't think he broke his nose.
Maybe he meant it metaphorically.
Figuratively broke his nose.
Yeah.
I mean, I hit my nose on the what are those things called? I call them Pokeballs, but they're not called that.
The Globe Graspers?
No. We had them in Indianapolis. The flywheels.
Oh,
wow. Nailed my face in the
qualifier.
They
do look like Pokeballs.
They do, right?
Oh, we're totally going to call them Pokeballs from now,
yeah,
on.
Yeah, everybody else, yeah, does.
Yeah, the flywheels are so dangerous.
Yeah, it's so easy to just go like, pfft. I had like a bump. I was like, oh man, not again. I was hitting my face on things. So embarrassing.
Oh man. All right. Lita, do you have any more questions for Meghan?
No, not directly. I just want to say that I have always really admired the way that you kind of balance femininity with this whole sport that has been male dominated for so long. You know, you always have your nails painted and wear bows and you're a model. Is that something that you think about a lot or feel pressure to conform to a certain style or anything like that?
Not at all. That's just who I am. Like, I've always done sports that are pretty male dominated, and I've always just been kind of girly, and I think that you can be girly and do a sport that men are really the ones who do more often. So just me being me. Yeah. Can't help who I am.
That's awesome. And I'm sure that you have brought some much needed style to the Wolfpack.
I do my best. Ask Noah. I'm constantly complaining. I'm like, oh my gosh, really? We need to fix these. I'm not wearing that. But if you asked him, what I always say, it's probably like, I'm not wearing that. I gotta wear something else.
Got a really cute in Vegas.
Yeah,
it was Wolfpack branded like sparkly crop top. Yeah. I would like to see all of the men wearing that. I want to see Ian and all of them in that next
year.
That'd
be hilarious. Also, like, how funny is it that Grant always wears that tank top with my face on it?
That was ridiculous.
All the time. He'll send me snaps of like him in, or like, they'll be like, oh, hey, Meghan, what's up? And it's like him in his shirt.
Yeah, I bought a Wolfpack shirt online recently, and I was looking at all of them, and there are ones with all of your faces on them. Like, you can just get a shirt with, like, Brian Arnold's face just huge on your body. They're so funny.
Yep, they're hilarious. The first time I saw it was the LA taping. I was, like, watching, and Noah walked up, and he's wearing the shirt with my face on it, and I was like... Oh my gosh. I was like so embarrassed. And then I took a picture with him. I was like, it's me. Yeah, they're really funny though. But Grant, ugh.
No. Yeah, that clip of Grant like holding it over his face.
Which I'm really glad I didn't see him do that. That would have like distracted me. Like it was bad enough that before I was going, he was like, you've got a girl. And he's like holding the shirt. And I'm like, oh my God. A nice little chuckle before I go. Too much.
He's a character.
Really is.
Well, that was all I had. Thank you so much for giving us your time. Is there anything that you want to promote to the listeners? What do you have going on?
Well, if anyone's going to be in Colorado, the next Wolfpack Ninja Tour is November 3rd through 5th in Loveland. I should know these names. Loveland. Go to wolfpackninjatour.com. It'll be there. I'm still jet lagged. That's probably like the next thing. I'll be in Virginia too. Akbar's doing some speaking event, and Grant and I will be running a ninja course there and doing a meet and greet in Lynchburg, Virginia. Next week. It'll be cool if anyone is in Virginia.
And where can we find you on social media?
Yes. Megan Martin 89 is my handle for Instagram and Twitter.
Awesome.
The Wolfpack Tour is in Loveland.
See?
You were correct.
Loveland.
Den Loveland, yes.
That's what the locals call the greater Loveland area.
Den Loveland, yeah. Of course. Duh. Yeah.
We're not from Colorado. You could tell us anything.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's true.
Sweet. I'm just going to start lying. No. Oh man.
All right, so thank you so much for joining us, Megan. This was a lot of fun.
Yes, thank you for having me. I now have side cramps from laughing too hard. So
hopefully
fun,
we don't impede your training too much.
No. You're helping me. I'm training right now. It's great.
Okay. Yeah, good. This is an ab workout.
Yeah, this is my workout. I actually don't have to go climbing now. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Hear that, listeners? Listening to our podcast is just as good as training with Megan Martin.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you're welcome for the personal training session. That we just yes.
Everyone's gonna have abs of steel.
Yeah, oh, Megan, you're always so fun to talk to. Anyone who's seen the photos that I've posted with us know that like we were laughing as soon as I met you. You're so fun, especially after like we're in Vegas in 110 degrees and you just like competed. And so always so nice to talk to you. You're always welcome.
Thank you.
On
the podcast. Thank you. I would love to come back. You guys are great.
All right. We'll see you.
All right. Bye.
All right, so that was Megan Martin. That was a lot of fun. Lita, are you doing okay? You're kind of hyperventilating.
I'm okay. I'm a little starstruck. It's fine. Just like a little dazed.
Yes. She has literal glaze over her eyes. I don't think she'll ever be the same.
Blinded by the radiant beauty.
Yes.
Of Megan Martin.
And I hope you appreciate how nice I was to you when Megan was here.
Yeah, but then by comparison, Megan was way nicer to me. So you were just like completely outshined.
Well, I was being sarcastic because I didn't insult you many, many times. But the point was that if I insulted you, she would stick up for you. And then it would be like you'd have the camaraderie and I'd be the villain.
Yeah. Sisterhood. That's why we always need to have two women and you on the podcast.
The common enemy.
What?
The common enemy of man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, you gave me credit for booking Megan. So then I just was like, Taryn gave me one compliment. So then even after you insulted me, I was like, still the nicest thing he's ever said to me.
I felt that there was a genuine like thing that was coming out of my mouth. And I was like, oh, how do I reverse this? How do I
no, sincerity.
How do I taint it? All right. So let's get into this and recap this episode properly. We basically did Megan, so we'll skip over her at the end. But we've got plenty of other people to talk about here. The first of which is Ian Weber, the 29-year-old shakerboard champion. Have you ever heard of a shakerboard referred to as a shakerboard? And did you then know that there were championships involved?
No. Why is there a championship for this? This is even weirder than like the arm wrestling last week, where it's like, why does this exist? How do you get involved in this? Is there really that stiff competition? I have so many questions. Are there women shakerboarders? I want to know.
Well, you would hope so.
You would hope so.
You would hope that there's a Meghan Martin of shakerboarding.
Shakerboarding has been male dominated for far too long. Someone needs to break into the sport. What would you call this?
Shakerboarding?
No. Yeah. Like, what would you call it if you didn't know the name for it?
Oh, sign twirling.
Yeah, I would say sign spinning.
Yeah.
And he was like really adamant that, like, you know, you see that guy and you feel really bad for him. And I'm like, I don't think I really do.
I
don't think I see sign spinners and I'm like, that poor guy.
Cause I usually see them like in the winter and I'm just like, oh, you poor soul.
It just reminded me of that SNL skit with Justin Timberlake where he's like dressed as food and he's like, never mind. The Bring It On Down to Omeletteville skit. You don't watch SNL.
I know as much about SNL as I do about sports.
Oh, okay. Literally nothing. Yeah. Okay.
So I did appreciate his attitude. He was like, you know what? I was doing a shakerboard thing and I want to be my best at everything I do. So even if it's something as silly as shakerboarding, I'm going to be the champion. And that's how I feel. Everything is a contest, Lita.
Oh, I know that that's how you feel. you do your best at everything except being a nice friend.
Did you not just hear how I described how nice I was? I took
as
the fall
really
for you.
Painful.
I was the villain to Meghan Martin. I made myself look like a jerk for you.
You don't need to make yourself look like
it's
a jerk.
It's very difficult
it.
To do because I'm such a nice person.
Oh my God. Let's talk about Ian Weber.
I was about to. But then somebody rudely interrupted me. So Ian Weber, he gets caught up on the ring swing. He's really caught up here and takes a bit of time to get through and then has a bad jump on the bouncing spider. He grabs onto that pipe too low and he isn't able to recover. The governor, as the aforementioned governor of Colorado, is like, what happened? Oh, no. And Akbar's like, I'll tell you what happened, governor. I'm pretty sure the governor did not hear Akbar saying any of that.
I'll tell you.
Unless he had like a secret line to like the hosts, like the governor gets to listen to Matt and Akbar, unlike the rest of the audience.
I'm sad that the governor in Pennsylvania didn't go to the Philadelphia one. I would like to see if Tom Wolf is a big American Ninja Warrior fan.
I don't know. I feel like, I wrote in my notes, is this Ian's run or the governor's? Because I'm pretty sure the governor got more screen time than Ian Weber.
Yeah, well, maybe he's a really good governor. I don't know anything about him.
Well, I'm sure that he is a very good governor who goes to American Ninja Warrior to watch one person's run and then leaves because they never showed him again.
Maybe they just didn't want to take away from anyone's screen time except Ian.
I did have the thought that, like, I wonder how long this guy stayed, because these things are miserable on occasion and, like, last all night. And to be there all night can be somewhat miserable. And there's no way that a politician stays there for more than, like, an hour, right? Like, I wanted, like, let's have, like, a bet here. Over under an hour, did he stay?
Dang, we should have asked Megan. How long was the governor there?
Yeah, I feel like it's less than an hour.
Probably.
Yeah. All right. So that was Ian Weber. Next up, we had Larissa Cottle, the 24-year-old concrete worker. And this is a weird series of runs. Okay, fine. She's a concrete worker. This is kind of like a take on Adam Rail, right? It's like, oh, it's Adam Rail. But she's a female. She's in a male dominated field. She's like, I can do something that men can do. It feels great. So there we go. She's a concrete worker, and that's the thing. She also has a raven hairdo.
Space buns.
Yeah, exactly. That's Larissa. What did you think about Larissa?
Well, she wasn't. You're referring to it being weird because there were other concrete workers, right?
Yes, well, we'll get to the further concrete work. But like, there's already Adam Rail, who is the concrete worker. We saw almost like scene shot for shot similar package for Adam about how he is the concrete worker and that builds up his strength for training at Ninja. And like, Larissa's was the same thing, except she's a female, which is fine. But then we get to another concrete person. Why are all the concrete people here? And why did they go back to back? When there's already a concrete ninja.
It's like all the engineers in Kansas City or wherever it was.
But at least,
it's like, that's just the place.
At least being an engineer is like a thing. Like,
so is being a concrete worker.
How many concrete workers are there? Is that really that common?
How much concrete is there?
I don't know. How many tow trucks are there? But we only remember one tow truck guy.
There's more concrete in the world than there are tow trucks.
Maybe.
Someone has to work on that concrete.
Tow truck is like a one-for-one thing. One person drives one tow truck. Concrete workers can make tons of concrete. Every one concrete worker makes probably 11 pounds of concrete per minute.
They don't make the concrete. You think that they just make it? Yeah.
They're
brewing it?
They create with their magic formula concrete.
Okay, so Tara knows nothing about anything.
I've learned lots about concrete from American Ninja Warrior. I feel like I'm an expert.
Clearly
at
this point. Not. I felt like her package was more about not just being a concrete worker, but about being like unconventional. It's like, I have this job that's unconventional for a woman, and I have tattoos and dreadlocks.
She marches to the beat of her own drum.
Whatever.
So with her raven hairdo, she gets hung up on the ring swing. She misses a few times, then almost completely loses momentum, but does manage to eventually get up and get that ring hooked. But then cannot get up the incline on the rail runner, and down she goes. Next up, we had a montage starting with our good friend, Tammy McClure, the wine warrior. She came up empty on the bouncing spider, and Lita's hopes and dreams of living in a wine warrior land of Vegasdom have been crushed.
They've been crushed like grapes for the wine.
Really, this is basically a positive for you, because we didn't see her in Vegas. And so if you hadn't seen her in Vegas and then only after Vegas learned that she's your best friend who will send you t-shirts, then you would have been like, wow, we really messed up in Vegas by not getting wine from Tammy McClure.
You think she was just bringing wine?
Oh, of course. She would have had she made it to Vegas.
Yeah, that's true. I really want to visit her her winery in Idaho, because they have like yoga there and it looks really cool. And she's a provider of a really cool t-shirt for me. So
Wine Warrior Land. That's,
yes.
I feel like she should be renaming it. Then we had Kyle Wilson, a construction worker, which is at least a little bit different than a concrete worker. And he couldn't get his big body up the rail runner.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Then we had Bart Copeland, the 38-year-old concrete ninja.
Does he call himself the concrete ninja?
He calls himself the concrete ninja.
No.
Did he run this by Adam Rail? Is Adam Rail like, okay, fine, I don't need the concrete ninja name? I don't know.
See, why do you get to be outraged by this, but I can't hate the guy who took the science ninja from Zach Kemmer?
I guess, you know what? I'm not seeing concrete ninja as Adam Rails. I think he's just a concrete worker who's also a ninja. He was asleep at the wheel, and,
you snooze, you lose.
Yeah, Bart swept in and took the name.
I guess so.
Yeah. Bart runs a concrete business, and... Sorry, that was me saying things in my notes that are funny to me.
Okay.
I've already complained about it, so I don't need to read what the hell is up with all these concrete people.
He runs the business where they make the concrete.
Maybe they all work together.
It's a concrete collective.
Concrete family. Speaking of family, Bart has adopted Daniel, who is a child from Uganda. Very, very cute family with Daniel and his other children. They're all like doing ninja stuff and hanging off his biceps and all that kind of fun stuff.
Yes, adorable. They're all lovely concrete collective.
They're actually all made out of concrete. They're not real humans.
There was a contestant named Concrete on this season of So You Think You Can Dance.
Oh my.
So maybe it's just something happening.
This family made out of concrete adopted this human child.
What a story.
They say he's the brother of Emily Durham, the champion wakeboarder. So there's that.
He's the I guess she changed her name.
Yeah. He was one of only 8 finishers in qualifying, which again was the fewest qualifying finishers ever.
Yeah. And he was one of those people that we were like, we would have liked to see people finish.
Yes.
But nope, they're going to get montaged.
Yeah, they're going to get montaged when they finish, and then we're going to see when they fail.
Yeah.
So he built his own ninja gym in his basement. He's very smooth on the rail runner. When he gets all the way to the salmon ladder, and Akbar says, gotta be strong like concrete on this one.
Yeah.
But
low hanging fruit.
But then he says, ooh, he's got a soft touch with this.
Yeah. You can't be soft like concrete.
No, but you can have a soft touch while making strong concrete.
Ooh, that's deep.
I know. So he almost makes it through the wedge, went for an early dismount, but runs out of gas and goes into the water. This was a funny moment from Christine. I don't know why they included this. Christine goes, oh, little Daniel loves American Ninja War. Hey, why are you rolling your eyes at me?
Yeah, she tried to be like, oh, he's rolling his eyes. It's like, that kid is saying what we're all thinking, Christine.
Yeah, you're patronizing me, Christine.
Yeah.
I like the show, but I'm not like in love with it. I'm not going to marry American Ninja Warrior. Jeez.
That is what 3-year-old Daniel is saying to Christine. Ugh, this blonde lady is so over the top.
Next up, we have another montage, starting with Tanya O'Donohue, who goes down on the ring swing. Then Devin Stratton, who is the college student who has no answers for the salmon ladder. And then Nick Kostreski, the guy who was grateful that Megan did not beat his time. He's the KO ninja, and he got knocked out by the wedge. But as we mentioned, he does manage to finish in 15th place, so he qualifies for Vegas. Then we have Brandon Totticini, the 29-year-old stock clerk who is representing the Navajo Nation. He wants to inspire his people to live healthy lifestyles.
Yeah, and this is an important issue because there are a lot of health issues in the Native American community, which are mostly just associated with being low socioeconomic status because they don't get any help from the government, and it's terrible. And of course, they were not as political as to get into those kinds of issues on the show, but I do think it's important to highlight and show kind of some of these effects that living on a reservation can have.
It did feel like they did like a drive-by of people have like health issues here, but they didn't really explicitly state that, like, yeah, that's the thing. Like,
yeah, I mean, they're not going to be like, the American government has caused us to suffer health consequences, even though that is the truth.
Well, Matt says, so they cut to like his supporting group in the audience, and Matt says there's over 300,000 or there's about 300,000 Navajo tribe members, and a lot of them are here in the stands tonight, and like we're seeing
like a
shot of like 5 people. And he's like, so we're seeing 5 people, and he's saying there's over 300,000 Navajo tribe members. Like, well, there's 5 here. And then he says, no, there's a lot of them here.
A huge percentage. Yeah. Innumerable.
Like at least 5 or 6 of the 300,000. Yeah. He gets onto this course. He has a really hard time getting a grip on the walls of the bouncing spider. Then makes it to the paddle boards. And Akbar says, hot feet like ghost pepper. Woo!
Yeah, just like a ghost pepper.
What does that mean?
I always say when I'm rolling dice in a game, I always say hot hands. So I appreciate the hot feet.
What do you need hot hands for when you're rolling dice?
To get a fire roll.
if you get a fire roll, it's going to burn away all of the little markers and you're just going to get nothing.
No, I need a roll that's going to symbolize the fire emoji. It's going to be the dice equivalent of the fire emoji. So I need to have hot hands.
Are you like a big proponent of the emoji movie?
I'm a big proponent of the fire emoji.
Okay. Your fire emoji about the emoji movie.
That's not what this is. The most vicious rumor you've ever spread about me.
I just listened to Rob's podcast about the emoji
the news
movie.
AF.
So it's in my brain.
Yeah.
Okay. So he also, when he gets to the Rail Runner, Akbar says, someone's been doing some field study.
What does that have to do with anything?
I have no idea.
Like, Navajos live in fields. Like, that just feels insensitive.
Maybe somebody in the listenership will be like, look, dummies. He said
Kobe Bryant, not field study.
He's a stock clerk, and stock clerks do field studies all the time.
Is he a stock clerk?
That's what it said.
He works at Target, they said.
Maybe he stocks things at Target.
Oh, I was thinking like a stock trader. I was like, this is a weird two jobs.
Oh, man, what a mess. So Brandon can't get up the wall and he fails there on the warped wall. And that's all we see of Brandon.
And we're sorry that we could not have butchered covering your run on this podcast more. Brandon.
Next up was Jerry D'Aurelio, the 27-year-old U.S. Army attorney. She loves playing on obstacles.
Yeah, she does. And she's besties with Megan.
It's true. And she's also an army lawyer person.
Yes, an army lawyer person.
Yeah. I've been watching The Good Wife. And there was an army lawyer character on The Good Wife. And I was like, I know what this is. You do army law.
Wow, it took you watching a series to figure out that army lawyers do army law?
I didn't realize there were separate kinds of lawyers.
At all?
I don't know. I don't know anything about militariness.
No, but you don't
I knew
know
there were
that
like
there
military
are...
courts, but like I didn't realize that they like were actual lawyers that
but
were also
you didn't
also
know
soldiers.
That there are separate types of lawyers though?
No, I know there are different kinds of lawyers within the lawyerdom. I just didn't realize there were military lawyers and regular lawyers.
Okay. I mean, I feel like that makes sense.
So if you watch The Good Wife, that character was all I was thinking about with Jerry here. So Akbar says, trust yourself when she's on the paddle boards.
That's good advice.
Yeah. Trust yourself. Yeah. And she does. And she gets through. She's barely making those hops, those like big jumps on the Rail Runner, but unfortunately misses that transition for the second time. That's where she failed in qualifying.
Yes, but she does make it through with her friend. And this reminded me, they didn't highlight it, but like Barkley and Casey going through together was cute because they're friends in real life.
Yeah.
So I like that these female duos tend to be friends with each
other. Yeah, they really didn't highlight this. I wonder, maybe they felt like the Barclay and Casey story was more compelling. So they decided, like, we can't do that twice.
Yeah, they do look more alike, Barclay and
That's
Casey.
That's true. Okay, so, and then there was the whole thing about, like, oh, Casey inspired me to do this. Okay, so then we have another montage starting with Ben Antoine, who Matt says, even with his engineering degree, he couldn't figure out the wedge.
They also call him Big Ben, and when they cut to his family, they had like black and gold pom-poms, and so I think that maybe they're from Pittsburgh or something.
I thought you were going to say London.
No, Big Ben is the nickname for Ben Roethlisberger, the quarterback / terrible person of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I feel like your bias toward Pittsburgh is really showing here because...
No, everybody who watches football knows that Big Ben is like a thing.
All right. I'm doing another listener poll right now. When somebody says Big Ben, do you think of Big Ben in London or the Pittsburghian football player?
That's not the question. They had black and gold. They had Steelers colors on and Steelers pom-poms.
Let us know. So then we had Carson Voiles. V-O-I-L-E-S. When I wrote down these people's names and for the leaderboard, because he does manage to qualify here, I was like, man, I really screwed up by not trying to spell that
phonetically.
Yeah. Carson, he is another victim of the wedge, but again, does qualify. Then we have Brian Arnold, the 39-year-old ninja trainer. My first thought was just like, of course, Brian has to take on the course with the wedge in it.
Yeah, that is his arch nemesis. We don't have a lot of rivalries in American Ninja Warrior, but one of the great rivalries is Brian Arnold and the wedge.
Yes. He we said, he says he's broke his nose on the Rail Runner, but it didn't look broken. It looked fine to me.
Yeah, so dramatic.
He hates the wedge. He says he's retiring if the wedge takes him out again. So I was like, well, clearly he doesn't go down on the wedge then.
Yeah, I thought he was going to go down before the wedge and have it be like even worse. I'm like, well, it's true. He didn't go down on the wedge.
Well, we join him at the paddle boards. He speeds through the Rail Runner. he gets to the transition where he broke his nose, and he's doing the swings, and he manages to bonk his head on the back of the backswing this time. But he does make it through. He can't get through that obstacle without hurting himself somehow.
Yeah, and like he's so close to getting through this. Like that's not even where he goes out. It's not like he bonks his head and then drops.
Yes, he does. He makes it to the wedge. He's very, very cautious and does like super small hops. You can tell that he's been like practicing and training and like thinking this through. Like this is how I'm going to do it. He gets all the way through. Just goes for an early dismount and comes up short. And there it was. I feel like he did kind of conquer the obstacle, right? Like he managed to figure it out. He managed to get more than a few hops, which was like he was always just getting immediately stuck and then like not really able to figure it out. But he did manage to like get through it. It was just like, I don't want to have to go any further because I could mess this up. I'm going to go for this dismount. It was just kind of like misjudging the distance there.
Yeah. So goodbye to Brian Arnold. We'll never see him again because now he has to retire.
I guess so. Then we have Matt and Akbar saying the wedge is causing Rocky Mountain style problems.
I thought they said Rocky Mountain size problems.
They said the no, I don't know.
Rocky Mountain style problems doesn't make any sense.
Look, I have to write these notes very quickly.
If only someone would invent pausing technology.
You know, you can pause or you can not pause. There are two kinds of
that
people in the
question.
World, and one of those people is a pauser, and one of those people is not a pauser. And I blaze through life, and I don't look back.
Yeah, you're so reckless.
I'm an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah, right. You're always so high on life, you don't have time to pause.
They say Michael Salenzi and Dan Yeager are taken down by it on here on this wedge. They say seven competitors have been taken down by the wedge. Yeah, it's unfortunate.
But Dan still qualifies.
Oh, yes. As does Michael Salenzi. So then we have Lauren Ball, the 30-year-old gym owner, finally getting some credit for having competed in every season. But the last time he finished a city finals course was season 4, back when they still had that big, huge cargo net.
Yeah, back when I definitely watched the show.
Yes.
And know what you're talking about.
Basically what like the final like the city finals would end in like again obviously like a big tower climb, but it was just a huge cargo net, like sort of like the end of the stage one where they're just right. Like climbing up, and but like it obviously just took them like minutes to climb this thing.
Yeah.
So like every single time somebody finished, they'd just be like, all right, now they're starting the climb, and they'd like cut to like minutes later, now all right, they're at the top. So I like that we got some footage of the old seasons there. Even if it was very brief, they usually try to avoid having to show any of that, but it was fun getting to see some of it. So he says the reason why he's not been doing particularly well, or at least being able to finish a city finals course since season four, is because they have changed the obstacles to be more upper body focused. And he's not one of these rock climbers. He just doesn't have the upper body strength. So he really focused in the last year to train his upper body. He's trained with Megan and Brian, did some climbing. So now he's more prepared.
Yes. And this is good. I don't know why he's now just doing this, but it is good to see people addressing and attacking their weaknesses.
Yes. So he had the fastest time by more than a minute in qualifying. So he's taken on this course with some speed. He gets onto the rail runner and Matt says, ball continuing to roll.
I have used that one before, right?
First time I heard it.
Okay. Who was the muscle ball? Because I feel like they're also ripped.
Tyler Yamaguchi.
Yeah. Isn't that kind of taking the ball thing away from Lauren?
But Lauren actually has ball in his name. I feel like Lauren owns the ballness.
That's what I'm saying. The muscle ball kind of a...
Well, at least, Tyler's just like wearing it on his shirt. He's not like claiming...
He's not the ball ninja.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not the muscle ball ninja.
Because that sounds terrible.
Guess what?
What?
Akbar sees him on the top of the world.
Oh, you're
going
to get me with that every time. I was on top of it for... a couple weeks there.
He does manage to qualify by getting to the wedge fast enough, but he's not done there yet. He gets all the way through the wedge and has the craziest dismount from this thing. He had no momentum, and he just flings himself, lands very awkwardly, but does manage to hit it and completes the wedge.
What was that noise?
Ugh.
Okay, yeah, that's exactly what it was like.
So he gets onto the Ninjago roll. This is where I wrote this girl's name down. Made by Josephine Star Stevenson.
Sounds fake.
And I really hope that she gets paid for this.
Yeah. Why would they not just do like a palm obstacle or something? Start with a sponsor that you already have. I feel like next we're gonna have like the Costco elevator climb. Like, no.
Well, but at least with like palm or Costco, it's like years from now, Palm will still be a thing, but years from now, Ninjago is going to be a movie that came out 5 years ago that nobody saw because it was terrible. And what do you do from that point on?
First of all, you don't know that that's terrible.
No, but it could be terrible. That's the point. That if you name it after a movie, it could be the worst thing. It could be the next emoji movie. And imagine if they were like, oh, this is the emoji movie obstacle. And then it's like years from now, they're like, oh, they're on the deadly emoji movie obstacle. Brian Arnold has had a rivalry with the emoji movie obstacle for years now. It's just like, this is not good branding.
Oh my God. It doesn't come out till September 22nd. I just looked, that's so far away. I just looked it up because I wanted to see how much I had on Rotten Tomatoes. Because the other Lego movie, the original Lego movie was good. I didn't see the Batman one.
Well, that's what happens. Like, they made one pretty good Lego movie, and then they made the Batman Lego movie, which was not as good. And then this one will be not as good as the Batman one, and it'll just continue to decline like
that. It comes out in literally 3 weeks. Like, I feel like any momentum that people might get, at least now, I guess they've heard of it, like, is totally, no one is now waiting 3 weeks from now and be like, I saw that on Mac and Enjoy.
You generally start advertising in a few weeks in advance.
I guess. I felt like it would have benefited them more if you could go out and see the Ninjago movie right now.
Look, don't question their marketing motives.
Okay. I'm sure they have only the purest intentions.
Yes. So then we have another montage starting with Andrew. No, wait a minute. No, we got caught up on Ninjago. Lauren is still on the Ninjago, and we're already trying to push him off. So he gets stuck on the Ninjago roll. He's really pushing himself, trying to get past that big hump in the track, but ultimately goes down. He says that trying to get the bar unstuck from the wedge is what totally wiped him out, and says that the Ninjago roll is maybe the hardest obstacle he's ever done.
Do you think the Ninjago roll is easier or harder than the Rolling Thunder? I can't tell.
I think it's harder to complete, but I don't think it's going to wear you out as much as the Rolling Thunder.
Mm. Yeah, because there's that spinny thing, and you could just kind of get unlucky and have that be the one that you need in a clutch moment.
Yeah, because it's like you get to the Ninjago roll and it's like you either have the strength to get it up that hump or you don't. And if you don't, then you're done. Whereas Rolling Thunder, generally, as long as you've got the endurance for it, you're usually going to complete it. Because there's not like a single point in the obstacle that's going to knock you off. It's just a matter of like having enough energy. So there goes Lauren Ball. Of course, does manage to qualify in second place there. So good job, Lauren Ball.
And everyone in the audience got passes to the Ninjago movie, which they will forget that they have by the time the movie comes out.
None of them are going to forget. Although, granted, they were given these passes months ago.
Yeah, that's true.
So maybe they will. Anyway, so then we do have a montage starting with Andrew Duncan, who is the guy with the crazy mom. Mm-hmm. And he slips off at the rail runner. And then Ryan Suter from the Suter 7 goes down at the wedge, the 8th to fall there. Does qualify for Vegas, though.
Great. We'll get to see more of all 7 of them.
Yeah, I'm sure. Then we have Dalton Knopp, the 21-year-old engineering student. Best package, I think, of the season so far for me.
Best mustache of the season so far. I'll tee all shade at that mustache guy who is known for his mustache.
Okay, here's the thing. So I watched this package. It's great. Brother of Drew Knopp. He's a cancer survivor. He was diagnosed with cancer when he was just a young boy, could barely walk. He watched Ninja Warrior in the hospital with his brother. Last year, his brother came on the show. He did super well. He was like, someday I'm going to be on Ninja Warrior. And now he's here, battled through cancer with his brother. And they're here they're here together. They're facing the course. Great stuff. I really, really enjoyed it. And then they cut back to him and he's got that silly mustache on his face. And I'm just like, kind of undermines the whole thing.
It's the John Krause. It's a great mustache.
I don't know. I feel like, whatever you want to do with your mustache is fine with me, but it just doesn't match the story.
Whatever. He's finally 21. He's an adult and he needs to show it by having a Fu Manchu mustache.
I guess that's the moral of the story, that now he has managed to be here competing on Ninja Warrior. That's a victory for him, and being able to have whatever silly mustache he wants is up to him.
Yeah. Also, Akbar's brother visited him in the hospital. That's kind of funny.
Yeah, that was a very strange coincidence. I really, really enjoyed this package. I thought it was awesome. Really rooting for Dalton here. He's very small, so he doesn't have a whole lot of endurance here, and that's ultimately what's going to knock him out. But he does manage to get past the rail runner where he fell before. Matt says at the warped wall, "The air is thin, but that mustache is thick."
Yes, very wise.
I'm kind of scared right now at Lita's like absolute adoration of this mustache.
I think it's a great mustache.
Like the look in her eyes was just like of a deep hunger. Like,
stop. No, don't make it weird. I was looking at my notes and thinking, wow, Taryn did not get so much of what Akbar says, because he's talking about Aaron Rodgers and all these Green Bay Packers references that I bet you didn't even write down. So that's what I was looking at.
No, I totally wrote Aaron Rodgers down and Packers.
Aaron, do you have... Oh my God,
Aaron, excuse me. Now I'm going to refuse to read these because you got my name wrong.
Sorry, I was thinking about Aaron Rodgers. Taryn, do you have any idea who Aaron Rodgers is?
He's a pitcher.
What?
Basketball?
Oh my God.
Football.
What do you think the Green Bay Packers are? Do you think they're a baseball team?
No, they're a football team.
Okay. Aaron Rodgers is their quarterback, but more notably...
I was close. Pitcher,
a
quarterback.
Pitcher? Okay.
They're basically the same position.
More notably, Aaron Rodgers is the brother of Bachelorette winner Jordan Rodgers from JoJo's season.
Oh, JoJo.
Classic JoJo.
Why did you go out so early in Big Brother 14?
Yeah, that's definitely what I was referring to.
Yeah. Okay, so he's got a slow time up to this point, and really starts to run out of gas on the salmon ladder. Goes down just one rung short. Unfortunate here, but Dalton does not qualify for Vegas.
Did you see that meme that Will Simon made about me?
No.
It's related to this. It's like the one where the guy is looking at the other girl. You know that meme?
Yeah, actually, I did see this. I don't remember what it was doing though.
Oh, well, the one that he made was like Lita Brillman, and then the girl walking that he was looking at was like talking about fashion hair, fashion choices and facial hair, and then the other one was like talking about obstacles and strategy. Just thinking about that, how I just accidentally reinforced that.
He should have made one where the person you're looking at is not collecting listener comments and questions, and then the one that you're not looking at is collecting comments and listener questions.
I have our comments and listener questions. We only have
one. I'm sure. But... Oh, yeah, yeah, of course. Oh, yeah, you only managed to find one, even though lots of people submitted things. Anyone that left us a comment or sent us a comment, and you are not the one that Lita ends up reading at the end of this podcast, you know how much you matter to her.
Wait, I'm supposed to read every single comment, even if it's if it's just like...
Okay. I get to blame you.
Okay. Whatever.
All right. So next up was his brother, Drew Knopp, the 22-year-old gymnastics coach. Has a little trouble here on the rail runner, falls all the way back to the beginning a couple times, but does get through. Looks pretty tired here. It's probably the high altitude affecting him. I mean, even as Megan just told us, like even people who live here are going to have a hard time competing in this this altitude.
Yeah, it's so hard to imagine. Like I've been places with this kind of altitude, but I've never done physical activity. So I'm always like, oh, I didn't even notice it when I was in Albuquerque, which is as high as Denver. So
yeah, you heard it here first, everyone. Lita has never done any physical activity.
Never. No, I went to Albuquerque one time for my aunt's wedding and it was like 90 degrees because who has a wedding in New Mexico in June? So I like didn't really do anything but lay by the pool. And I was like, I must be like really in good shape because I don't even notice the difference in altitude.
Wow. From somebody who's never done any physical activity. That's
never
an impressive
in my life. I was just born this healthy.
So Akbar says something here, which is probably like the most out of left field thing I think I've heard him say in a while. So Drew gets to the wedge and Akbar says, now he's got the sibling thing out of the way. Now he can focus on the wedge.
It's not out of left field. It just doesn't really make any sense.
Because his brother went down on the salmon ladder. And so I think what Akbar is trying to say here is like, you beat your brother.
Yeah, sibling rivalry.
Now you can focus on the wedge after we got the most touching brotherly love package we've ever seen.
So now that's behind us. We can focus on the real story.
Now that you beat your cancer surviving brother, you can focus on the real stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever, Akbar.
So Drew, he goes down pretty quickly on the wedge, as most people do. Then we have Matt Dolce, the 30-year-old pharmacist. He calls himself the flying pharmacist, and he's this guy. He bowls at the start of the course.
Yeah, which has nothing to do with being a pharmacist.
No, but it does have everything to do with being quirky. Did you know that pharmacists were quirky?
No. Okay. This show teaches me so much about stereotypes about occupations that I never knew I had. It's like everybody thinks that truck drivers are lazy or something like that.
And eat donuts.
Yeah. A few weeks ago. And I was like, I don't think that I thought that. But I did not know that pharmacists were quirky. I've never met a quirky pharmacist.
Well, maybe you just didn't take enough time to get to know them.
Maybe when I'm picking up my prescription, I'm supposed to be like, hey, do you like handlebars? Is that this guy? Yes. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
No, you're supposed to like mime bowling at them and they'll probably like catch it and be like, whoa, heavy bowling ball.
Why would they catch it? That's not how bowling works. Wouldn't they knock?
Because they're quirky.
They would fall over like a bowling pin, Taryn.
That's too normal.
Oh, that's not quirky enough.
See, you'd know this if you got to know your pharmacists a little better.
Sorry, I should do that more.
Well, Matt loves ski biking, which I've never heard of before, but this looks actually kind of fun.
This is made up.
Well, we did see actual footage of it.
No, he made it up. Like, he just put skis on a bike instead of wheels. It's like, this is a sport now.
More of a sport than shaker board.
Sign spinning, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, I think it's pretty funny. He says here, he cannot let Matt Eisman get a pun in about him by falling on the bars.
Yeah, and then Matt's a real D about it because he immediately is like, ironically, the guy who's comfortable with handlebars. No, he asked you not to do that.
No, well, like, what he does is he's like, well, I'm not allowed to make the pun that the guy who loves handlebars and bikes might fall on the handlebars. Like, he gets it out anyway. Like, the whole point was that he didn't, like, he was going to, like, get through there.
Yeah, but he does say, ironically, the guy who is comfortable with handlebars.
Fine.
Just saying. I felt like he did not respect his wishes.
I like this, though. You know, calling out the editing. He didn't want to be montaged with a quick pun.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. If you're like, you're not allowed to make a pun about me, then you really can't be montaged.
Instead, Akbar made a bunch of Dolce & Gabbani puns.
How did you pronounce that?
Look, I have no idea what this is.
Can you repeat that?
I have no idea what this is. Well, I don't know why you expect me to know what this is. Is it not Dolce & Gabbana?
It is Dolce & Gabbana. I thought you said Dolce & Gabbani. It's a designer, Dolce & Gabbana.
Yeah, it's got the... I worked at a sunglass store
at
one time in my youth. Yes.
That's awesome. What did you learn?
I learned that I read the Game of Thrones series for 10 hours a day and like threw my book during the third one. Okay. There's literally... I was in the middle of reading The Red Wedding and... people were like coming up to me to buy sunglasses and I was literally
so
like, get away from me. I'm not emotionally prepared for this right now.
How dare people try to buy sunglasses at a sunglass store?
Yeah, it was more of a hut, but it wasn't the sunglass hut.
It was a hut with sunglasses, but it's not what you're thinking.
It was a little kiosk outside, yeah. Anyway, so Akbar says, as smooth as Dolce & Gabbani on the floating steps.
You just said it again.
Damn it. You screwed me up. You screwed me up. Dolce & Gabbana.
Okay. You all heard it.
It's only because you said it first.
Sure.
Then he says, this bouncing spider, it's venomous.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. So he makes it to the final rung of the salmon ladder, but can't hold on, so close to qualifying, but ultimately does not.
Yeah, he should have just bailed and just like tapped the bar on his way down. He should have just like jumped. Because if he touches that bar, then he finishes.
Yeah, but he didn't. So then we're told, Nate DeHaan and Ben Burkhalter go out early, surprisingly, and they are out.
I'm shocked. Yeah. I don't remember who edit those people are.
And we have a montage starting with Luke Chambers, the Wisco Warrior, I believe.
From Wisconsin is what that means.
Okay. He is the 10th victim of the wedge. Then we have Sam San, who gets DQ'd on the paddle boards, unfortunately. He steps in the middle there. And then finally, Michael Stanger, who goes out on the salmon ladder. Also pretty close to qualifying, but goes out here.
Yeah, Akbar on that podcast they listened to with him and Kevin Bull said that Michael Stanger was someone who, like, the walk-on line had basically shut down the first time that he was coming to qualifiers. He was a walk-on and they had like shut it down. They're like, no more walk-ons. And he like went up to Matt Akbar personally and was like, please, my wife has this condition. Like, I have to do this. And they let him do it. So that was a fun story.
No. Oh. Well, now that we're done advertising other podcasts that get better content,
I didn't
us.
Even say the name of the other podcast. I was just letting you know that I learned a lot from Akbar.
Next up, we have Jesse Lucero, the 27-year-old ninja coach. We joined him at the paddle boards. This guy waited 29 days in the walk online. Maybe if Michael had done that, then he wouldn't have had to ask Matt and Akbar.
Maybe he did. You don't know.
Akbar says on the paddle boards, come on, quick feet. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Quick feet, hot feet, all kinds of feet on the paddle boards.
Yeah. I was very confused by this. I didn't know how to write down the noise he made in between feet and nice.
You did a good job.
Thank you. It seemed to me, I forgot to ask Megan this, but it seemed to me like the padding after the rail runner for like the dismount was like not long enough because they kept like overshooting it.
Yeah. I mean, we've had issues with the padding before.
Yeah.
In this television program.
Well, Jesse manages to make it all the way through the wedge. Only the second person to do so tonight. Only the third person total with the night as a whole to do this. He comes in third place to qualify for Vegas, and he unfortunately goes down near the top of that little hump on the Ninjago roll.
It's a killer, that Ninjago roll.
Yeah, this is not a fun word to say, guys.
No, and also I would have read it as Ninjago, which I think is, like, not better, but makes more sense.
It really does, especially if the point is to combine ninja and Lego.
Yeah.
Ninjago is not only easier to say, but makes more sense.
Yeah, Ninjago.
There's no ah in either ninja or Lego.
Yes, there is. Ninja.
Ninjago. No, sorry. Ninja. Ninjago. That the whole point is that we're not doing ah. We're going
ninja. Ninja.
Exactly. See?
Yeah, you're right. But you didn't even get that it was a portmanteau, so...
Oh, fine. Jeez. Always have to win.
So, yeah, when it comes to matters of the English language, I do.
Well, fine.
We have put this to the test.
Yeah, but I always win.
That's not true.
It's very true. Oh
my God.
Next up, we have another montage, starting with Craig Richard, who goes down on the wedge, but does qualify for Vegas. And then Yancy Quezada, also goes down on the wedge and qualifies for the first time, crying when he finds out, very emotional. If you don't recall, I talked about Yancy last year because he was in Philly and he was very, very popular with all the ninjas there, like in the whole crowd. Everyone loves Yancy. I thought this was a great little moment for Yancy. I mean, unfortunate that he doesn't get spotlighted here, but cool to see him qualify for Vegas.
Yancy is a great name because I love Futurama, and that's the only other place that I've heard that name before.
There you go. Next up is Ian Dory, the 26-year-old pro rock climber, has never failed to complete a finals course or a qualifying course. He's got a new baby, Olivia, and his son Pax loves ninjas, and he climbs, and he's got a blanket that's got Ninja Warrior on it, and he loves sleeping
in
the blanket.
I love that blanket. Yeah. I want that blanket.
He carries photos of both his children in his sock during his run.
Yeah, I remember that being a thing about Ian Dory, being like the one thing I knew about him when I first started like podcasting about the show. It's like, oh, that's a guy with the socks who has his child's picture in it. But I think I like some kind of forgot that Ian is a dad because he's like kind of referred to as like the wolf pup. He's like he's the youngest man in the group, I think. I'm not sure if Megan is younger than him, but I forget that like he's been a dad the whole time that he's been on this show.
Yeah.
Or at least the whole time that I've watched it. So glad to be reminded of that, because I don't think we've gotten a package about Ian in a long time.
Well, I feel like we really dropped the ball not asking him where he got a ninja blanket the last time we talked to Ian.
We didn't know that he had the ninja blanket yet.
That's why we dropped the ball. We should have asked him, do you have a ninja blanket?
Do you have one? Where did you get it? Can I have one?
Yeah. So we join him at the Rail Runner, and just, of course, Ian, very smooth through the course. This was one of my favorite runs to watch of the entire season. This was so compelling to me. Like I said, I really enjoyed this episode. I, for whatever reason, I'm usually tired on Tuesdays. I got to stay up late to edit the Roundtable podcast. So, like, I'm always, like, in a fragile emotional state as I'm watching these things. So I was just, like, my heart was just, like, beating watching him. He gets all the way to the wedge, and he has massive struggle face, like the most struggle face you have ever seen. He is just like really, really struggling to get through this thing, and then has a ridiculously far dismount, and somehow manages to land. I'm pretty sure I screamed when he made that dismount.
Yeah, his foot almost dips.
Yeah.
It's so close. And like you're right about the struggle face. His whole face is teeth.
They say he's only 145 pounds and Ninjago is 150 pounds. So he's really having to work this thing that's heavier than he is.
Yeah. And that's crazy. He doesn't seem that small to me. I don't know.
I was surprised.
I guess he's just super, like, has absolutely no body fat.
Maybe he's shorter than we think he is.
Maybe, if only we'd ever seen him in person.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Or talked to him in any capacity.
Right.
So then he gets onto the elevator climb and has some more struggle face, of course. And it gets, he's climbing up there, and I'm just like, go, Ian, go. You gotta make it. Come on. And he's like, he's starting to slow down toward the top, and you could see his hands about to fall. And it's like, you gotta get there. And he gets his feet up to the top, and you're like, oh, thank God. And then he moves over to the side, and I was like, what are you doing here? You know the technique. I've told you on the podcast after the fact, you know, the technique is you gotta use the your hands to climb up now that you have your feet there, because it's easier because you've got your weight taken off of you. So you got to do that. And then he doesn't do that. He takes his hand off of the handle, and he grabs the ledge, and he's trying to pull himself up. And then it's all of a sudden like, now I'm committed. And it was like, oh my God, yeah, he's going to fall. But luckily, even though he's got one hand, only one hand on the handle at that point, he's able to like get that a little bit higher, push himself up, and then collapse at the top of the tower, barely even able to reach up and hit the buzzer. But he does, and he exclaims with emotion, "Rawr! Yes, I did it."
Did you really say "rawr"?
No.
Okay.
I ad-libbed.
Like, that'd be so weird. Yeah, and then Christine is like, "You looked like you were napping up there." And it's like, he's almost dead, Christine. Like, he looked dead.
What a great run. The whole thing was awesome. So fun to watch. It was one of those moments where they were like, this is the Palm Wonderful run of the night. And I was like, damn right it was.
Yeah, it was. I don't care that that means that Megan is not finishing.
Yeah, they were like, oh man, we could really see Megan finish this course. And I was like, nah,
no, you can't.
Not when you gave Palm Wonderful to Ian.
Yeah, but absolutely he deserved it. If anyone ever deserved Palm Wonderful, crazy yes, healthy run of the night, it's him.
And he says, like I said, he says this is the hardest course he has ever done. So congrats to Ian for not giving us two unfinished courses in a row. Yes. So then we cap off the night with Megan Martin. We already went through her run with Megan, so we don't need to go through it again. It's always fun to read out the Akbarisms and puns that people make to the person that they were made for.
Yeah, especially if they haven't heard them yet. They haven't watched the episode.
Yes. All right. So looking at the leaderboard here, we have Ian Dory as our only finisher, and then Lauren Ball, who went out at the Ninjago roll, as well as Jesse Lucero. Then Carson out at the wedge, Ryan Suter, Dan Yeager, Craig Richard, Bart Copeland, Drew Knopp, Ben Antoine, Brian Arnold, Yancey Cazeta, Luke Chambers, Michael Salenzi, and Nick Kostreski in the top 15. And then, of course, Megan Martin, who goes out at the wedge, and Jerry D. Aurelio, who goes out on the rail runner, are our two female qualifiers.
Yes, I like that Carson is now like Madonna.
Yeah.
No last name, just Carson.
So that's our episode. Like I said, I really enjoyed it. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode with Megan Martin. Thank you again, Megan, for coming on. I mean, she was like, yeah, I just like flew here from a place doing a thing. I mean, her whole package was about how busy she was. So the fact that she gave us some of her time was very, very awesome of her.
Yes, this was months in the making.
Yes. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. Lita, do you have any comments and or questions?
Oh, like from other people?
Yeah. Like, no, I'm just asking you.
Like, I don't really have any further questions for you, Taryn.
Do you have any questions for me, Lita, about this podcast that I do, that I'm a Ninja Warrior expert?
I was just wondering how the sunglass business is going.
It was going great.
It was? Okay.
Yeah.
You don't keep up with it with all your old coworkers from the Sunglass Hut, but not the Sunglass Hut.
No, not the Sunglass Hut. It was, I worked alone. I traded off with a friend of mine, and she would occasionally lend me books. There was one time that a lady came up to me and she was like, "Does your boss know that you're reading?" And I was like, yeah, that was like the whole condition of doing the job. They're like, you can read. It's fine.
Is that why you have such cool sunglasses all the time? Because you worked there?
No. We sold very cheap sunglasses there. They were all knockoffs.
Well, your sunglasses could be cheap, but still look cool.
It's sure, but the ones that I, the many that I got from that store, not cool.
Okay.
But it was a fun time. I read a lot of books. Yeah.
Okay, I'm happy for you. Yeah. Yes. So Alex Moran wants to know how we feel, our thoughts on Casey retiring to go to the WWE.
So we actually heard about this in Vegas. I believe my first thought was laughter.
Yeah. My first thought was like, isn't she going to die? She's 95 pounds.
Well, I mean, it was mostly just like the idea that like she's going from American Ninja Warrior to WWE. Like, this is not what I thought was going to happen with Casey. But, you know, I think it's probably pretty lucrative for her. So I'm very proud of Casey. Obviously, she hasn't been doing the greatest on A&W lately. And as she mentioned in her package, it's like kind of just not been fun for her lately. So, you know, I'm happy for her.
Yeah, pulling the Jenna Maraska, where iconic on one reality show and then you go to the WWE and have an illustrious career.
I think that's where my laughter came from.
Thinking about Jenna Maraska.
Yeah, like without actually thinking about Jenna Maraska, but thinking about how I thought about Jenna Maraska.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Will asks us, why is the wedge back? Why is it back?
Because they're trying to create a wedge between Brian Arnold and his heart.
They're trying to drive a wedge between Brian Arnold and ever coming back to the show.
Yeah. I feel like they, you know, it's become a legend now, you know, it's the legendary wedge, you know, I feel legendary. Like they like it when
I've never seen Taryn look this disappointed in me. And that's saying something.
No. I feel like they like it when there's an impossible obstacle, because then they can go, whoa, this person completed it.
Yeah. It's exactly what they sound like.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yes.
We also got a comment from Pia Virolainen. I'm sorry. I've read your name so many times. I never said it out loud.
Wow. I'm so sorry, Pia.
She said, bad episode equals great podcast. It is known, you know, nothing, outraged commenters, referring to all of the people who were so outraged that I don't know why, because the episode was late or something.
Well, we were saying that people were going to be mad because we complained about the episode.
Oh, right. Yeah. And then that definitely occurred. All of our listeners were so mad and left comments on
it. I do believe Kevin, who was an obstacle creator that we met in Vegas, let us know that because, I mean, he's gone to so many of these tapings and stuff, that it was actually raining in Kansas City. And so Broken Bridge was actually wet when they went across it, and that was why they had so much difficulty with it.
Yeah, he said that it was not like properly wiped out, or it had just rained or something, specifically for the guy who jumps off of buildings and for Brendan Mears. So that's what happened to them. But Dan Palese managed to not do it without that hindering him. So I don't know.
There you go. Lita wants to make sure that she can still blame people.
I just still want to make sure that I get to talk about Dan Palese as much as possible, even if it's throwing shade.
Okay. So that's our episode, unless you have any more comments and or reviews, Lita.
No, I read them all. I read a nice comment.
Okay, that's fine. Just wondering.
Okay.
So thank you everyone for joining us. If you so desire, you can follow us. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can go to American Ninja Warrior Rehap Ups. That's RHAP Ups. You can also go to Reality TV Rehap Ups if you want to subscribe to the parent feed, where you get lots of other stuff like The Taryn Show and all of our Big Brother coverage. And So You Think You Can Dance and all of that good stuff. I just spoke with my fellow live feed correspondent, Melissa Denny, on The Taryn Show. I had a really, really great time talking with Melissa. Lots of fun, and I thought it was a really good interview, so I hope you guys check that one out. By the way, to any American Ninja Warrior listeners, you can listen to any of those Taryn Show episodes. They are not restricted to any particular show or podcast. They're very general, so feel free to check them out. And you can, of course, follow us on Twitter. I am at Armstrong Taryn. Lita is at Lita Tweeted. You can also follow Lita on Instagram, where Megan Martin follows her at Lita Grammed. Lita, what else are you up to?
So You Think You Can Dance, recording tomorrow. Last night's episode had the best opening number I've ever seen in 14 seasons of the show.
Better than so fake I'm going to get.
Is that what you would call an opening number? Yeah. Okay. Our thresholds for performance are maybe a little bit different.
Sorry, I'm not as highbrow as you.
Yeah. It was incredible. So I will be raving about that as well as other things, as well as raging about a couple other things, as per usual. And then also tonight, I am doing something a little bit different. I'm recording a podcast. I'm guesting on a podcast called Reese's Pieces, which my great friend Taylor Cotter, who is of the reality TV, well, of the post-show recaps world. She does the Orange is the New Black recap on RJP. They review Reese Witherspoon movies. So I will be talking to her about Legally Blonde 2, Red, White, and Blonde. So I will tweet that out when it drops. That is not on RJP, but all in the family.
Are you a big Spoon fan?
A big fan of the Spoon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love Reese Witherspoon because of Big Little Lies and Legally Blonde being my favorite movie.
So, all right. You're a big Spoon fan.
I've never...
It's my nickname for her.
Yeah, you don't. I feel like you are not, though.
Fine.
Yeah, you couldn't finish Big Little Lies, so we're not friends.
I couldn't.
Yeah, whatever. So yeah, check me out there.
All right,
on that podcast.
All right. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. Make sure you leave a comment or a review. You can find us on our episode website.com, and that's about it. So we will see you next time.